Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Bill and Melinda Gates, Michael Bloomberg, Richard Branson. You've heard of them. They're all billionaires who've signed what's called the Giving Pledge, a group of ultra-wealthy business people who've committed to dedicating the majority of their wealth to philanthropy. But have you heard of Bill Cummings? He, too, has signed the Giving Pledge, and if the name does ring a bell, it's because maybe you've seen Cummings Park in Woburn, Cummings Center in Beverly. The 81-year-old is the founder of Cummings Properties, the huge Massachusetts real estate firm whose assets are now put towards the philanthropy of the Cummings Foundation. But before you think that Bill Cummings is something of a Bay State version of Bill Gates, you know, the billionaire philanthropist who's got an outsized influence on public policy by virtue of his money, well, think again. Because, in fact, the Cummings Foundation operates very differently from the Gates Foundation. Cummings has a grant-making process where community members decide what services they need the most. And we're going to hear more about that in a minute. But first, you've got to get to know Bill Cummings a little bit better. He tells his story in his new book, Starting Small and Making It Big.
I grew up in Medford, a very modest background. I had one sister. We lived with our parents and a one-bedroom apartment up over a liquor store and a laundromat on Salem Street in Medford, and had a very happy childhood. There was always plenty of food. It was very modest, though.
Yeah.
My mom, what her job was in the days that I remember her doing it, was going around for the March of Dimes with the little paper can, going around the street door to door, donations for the Cancer Society or whatever it might be. The Red Cross was another big one. And she would do them all. And she was a stay-at-home mom. And my mother took that very seriously. And that was sort of my model. Stayed in Medford most of my life. Went to high school, went to college at Tufts. Graduated from Tufts University in 1958. A long way back, I know. I took successive jobs with two national sales company. One of them I was peddling Vicks VapoRub. The other I was with Gorton's, the fish stick people.
So yeah.
One smelly product to another.
But I read, that you, what were you, 12 when you first kind of had a notion that you wanted to go into business or you were interested in business?
I was pretty serious about it by the time I was 12. I was peddling things off around the neighborhood before that and was encouraged by my parents. This was not too long after the Great Depression,
mm-hmm.
remember?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the prevailing thinking of most people who got through the Depression and were happy to see another side coming, but they couldn't shed all that they had learned in the last 15 years before that.
And so is that part of where your entrepreneurial spirit came from, or was there also something in addition to that maybe sort of fundamental about business that you really liked?
More happenstance as far as that goes. I was on a city commercial block. There weren't any other kids on the block. And I did other things.
Yeah.
Those weren't the days when there were programs around that I knew anything about, of Little League or soccer or peewee football or any of the things that my kids all took a part of. They just weren't there at that time. Or if they were, we didn't know anything about it. There weren't very many of them. And I did other things, and I got into business and loved it.
Wow. Oh, that's really interesting. All of a sudden, it's making me wonder if we're over-programming kids and ought to just sort of let them roam around and maybe more might find that entrepreneurial spirit.
I've wondered exactly that.
Yeah.
I think it probably does happen in many cases.
Wow. Now, you met your wife because of fruit punch?
My dad happened to know about a very small company on Fulton Street in Medford that was for sale, and it had been around more than 100 years as making old Medford fruit punch. The company was all but out of business. They had one part-time worker, and he made fruit punch on Wednesday afternoon. I bought the business for $4,000 after several hours of discussion back and forth with the seller, and we concluded the whole deal in one afternoon, though.
Wow.
The next morning, I had the keys to the business and was in the fruit punch business.
And you met your wife through this?
Yeah. I met my wife at the Mass Eye and Ear Infirmary. Joyce was a hospital dietitian there. This was her first full-time job, and we met in the kitchen.
You were selling juice to them?
I was selling fruit punch and providing a dispenser for put it on the cafeteria line. And that was the secret to the business. We provide electric refrigerated dispensers. Primarily, we were in colleges and universities, though.
Mm-hmm.
Almost exclusively.
I see.
By the end, we had 330 or 40 college accounts.
Wow.
And we're selling a lot of fruit punch. I operated for 6 years, I think, altogether. And bought it for $4,000, as I mentioned, and sold it for $970,000 or something like that.
In 6 years?
In 6 years. And, of course, those were $1968, $69. And those started me off in the real estate business.
Honestly, you really never know where your seed money is going to come from. Bill Cummings obviously loved hard work and had an eye for opportunity. He had a pretty simple rule: buy land that had development potential. Cummings is also very much a real estate man of the old school. He told me he personally guaranteed every loan he took, and he also doesn't like leverage. Today, Cummings properties are debt-free. That's $1 billion worth of property, 11 million square feet, now making money entirely for philanthropy.
11 million square feet, and every bit of it is in Massachusetts. Most of it today is owned by Cummings Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And that my wife and I decided a long time ago that we had more than we needed or wanted. And our kids were completely supportive in that thought. And they didn't want to be in the business, but neither did they want us just to sell it to somebody for profit. And they were totally supportive of our plans to build Cummings Foundation.
Tell me a little bit more about the conversation that you and your wife had that led you to create the foundation, because it's a big decision to make, right? I mean, you have this giant portfolio, $1 billion worth of assets that you want to put to work somewhere. What made you go down the road of philanthropy?
We formed Cummings Foundation in 1986, but in 86 we weren't doing anything much with it. We formed it as a place to begin to build an endowment. And over a period of time, that began to grow fairly substantial. We had always, since I've first been in business, I think there's a strong obligation for anyone that's in business in a community to support the activities that are formed in that community to help the people who live there. And by and large, those are going to include employees of the business, aren't they? And to support the local economy on not-for-profits is something we always did. It was 10% of all of our profits from day one. So the foundation was easy. So eventually we started putting substantial amounts into the foundation. We started putting buildings in, and that was the approach we took. And so now the majority of the buildings are already owned by the foundation, and the rest of them are all pledged to it. When we're not here anymore, that they'll pass to the foundation.
And you said your kids were okay with that because they didn't really have that much interest in the business?
I had previously provided them with what we felt they needed, and turned out there was more than they needed, and all four of them have given back substantial amounts.
I see. Okay.
Themselves to the foundation.
Okay.
The foundation, it depends vitally on local volunteers. We gave in the course of this year probably $15 million that were distributed solely at the discretion of community volunteers.
So this is what I really wanted to share with you, because Cummings is so understated about it. So let me repeat what he just said. Bill Cummings' billion-dollar foundation distributes money at the discretion of community volunteers. The foundation reaches out to communities. They recruit teachers, firefighters, other volunteers, you know, experienced grant writers too, and has them decide over several rounds which nonprofits in their community will get the grants. So Cummings says this kind of community-based philanthropic decision-making is pretty easy to justify. I mean, who knows better what a community needs than the community itself? Now contrast this to the Gates Foundation, let's say, a powerful philanthropy that's done great work, certainly, but also reaps a lot of criticism for its outsized policy influence in certain sectors. I'm thinking of, say, Gates' education reform efforts. So I asked Bill Cummings about that, about whether Gates deserves such criticism.
If it was self-serving in some way for him, it wouldn't be the right kind of influence. But when it's being done by most of the people who have these funds, most of the people at least who are in the giving pledge, most of them didn't inherit their money. Mm-hmm. Many did, but most did not. And certainly the Gateses didn't.
Yeah.
And if they know as much as they do and are willing to put their funds out there and for no gain whatsoever, I find it pretty sad that they do come under as much criticism as you point out, and I know they do on occasion. So that happens. Boston Foundation is a very similar size to Cummings Foundation locally, and it has a wonderful program of, on a small way, doing what Gates does.
Yeah,
we're different in the sense we don't try to directly influence anything, and I think Boston Foundation does wonderful things, but it's altogether different.
Yeah,
and we're not better because we don't do it. We're trying to come up with something that's altogether new, though, in having the community get a big hand in how it's done. They make the decisions, and 95% of the money we give is to organizations that my wife Joyce and I never heard of before.
Yeah. But this is a really, really critical difference, though. Like you said, it's something new. I don't think that many foundations use this means by which to decide who to disperse the funds to.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
They don't. What we're working toward is just this new kind of a foundation in the end that is really a community foundation right down to the actual giving.
When you put the decision-making in the hands of community members, it's easy for me to see how the positives to that, right? Because like you say, it goes through this process, and so the best applicants rise to the top. But the whole time, it's like the community is saying, here's what we really feel we need the most. So that makes a lot of sense to me. But at the same time, it's taking the decision power away more or less from the foundation itself. And I think there's a lot of boards of foundations that would feel really uncomfortable with that. I mean, what would you say to them?
We've got a pretty potent board, a pretty effective board. It's got three college presidents, a justice of the Mass Supreme Court, former major newspaper president, and physicians and others that are like the volunteers. And all of those people, by the way, have been among the volunteers, working with the volunteers side by side. They're there. They know so much more about the community. And we've got all these people, and they will hunker down and really get in and visit the organizations that are applying for the funds. And how else could we do it?
Yeah.
How could we reach out to all these small organizations if we had to hire a staff? Cummings Foundation, how many employees? One paid employee. And that's Joel Swetz, who's been our executive director for 14 years, I guess, something like that. Joel is an attorney by training. Probate attorney, I guess, does a wonderful job in orchestrating the legalities of everything that we do to make sure we do it the right way as far as administration is concerned. He never gets involved in grant making at all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's ever sat in on a grant discussion. I don't get involved in them. And Joyce doesn't. We try to encourage the volunteers, make them realize how important they are.
Well, so I guess my last question is just a real easy one. It's in the book, yes, but also do you have a piece of advice for young aspiring entrepreneurs now?
I think perhaps the most usable advice I would give aspiring entrepreneurs is to don't even think about doing that unless they're ready to go in it and really dedicate themselves to it and recognize that it doesn't mean I'm working for myself, Nobody's going to give me any more hard time and tell me what to do when I'm working, because I'll work for myself. And that kind of an approach is a recipe for disaster. If you're going to have a business, they're going to start something, it has to be something that's got the full dedication, and they've got to go to bed thinking it and wake up in the morning because they've got something they're dying to get done that day.
Yeah. Wow. So what do you, I mean, you've done so much. What are the things that you wake up thinking you're dying to get done?
You gave me the perfect chance to talk about the book again now.
That's
but
what
I won't.
I do.
But I won't.
Okay. Well, I'll just wrap up then in that case, because we've been going for so long. Bill Cummings is founder of Cummings Properties and the Cummings Foundation, and he's also author of Starting Small and Making It Big, An Entrepreneur's Journey to Billion-Dollar Philanthropist. Bill Cummings, it's been an incredible pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so very much.
I've certainly enjoyed the opportunity, and thank you so much, Magda.
Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Chris Siderick, and Paris Alston. We had help today from Zoe Mitchell, Susie Tapson, and Lily Tyson. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.